I would like to invite you to sit as comfortable as you can. Listen to this morning's sharing. This morning, I would like to share with you a talk with the title, Mindfulness Meditation, A Path to Freedom. I came to this country when I was a teenager, as a refugee. This country is probably the leader in the world of freedom. We have a lot of freedom in this country. A lot of people want to come to this place for that reason. We can go anywhere we want. We can practice any religion that we choose to. There's a lot of opportunity available for us. To the poor country, this country is like heaven, be able to come to this country. I came from a country where you cannot practice what you believe. Sometimes you can't even go to school if you're not in a certain class and the society. So be able to live in this country is quite a privilege, quite a lucky thing to have. So a lot of people here think that we are free. Once we gather this country, we're free. Matter of fact, when I first came over, the first thing I wanted to see is the Statue of Liberty in New York, because that is like the greatest symbol of the whole world. You are here. We are free. We can do what we want. We can say anything we like. And we can really live in a free life. However, as I be able to deepen my practice, I ask myself, I'm here in this free world, but am I really free? Can I say the thing that I want to say? By my choosing? Can I do the things that I like to do by my choosing? I begin to question that, whether I'm really free or not. Let me tell you what I meant. If you look at the whole world, not in this country by itself, we've been raised, depending on where you're from, each of us has a different background, have a different of understanding, have a different of culture. Since we grow up, we have been influenced by that. You know, we have been conditioned to certain things. We now have things called personality. Each of us has a different personality because of the past. Let's pick an easy case. Depending on where you are in the world, people look at things differently. People in Southeast Asia look at happiness may be very different from people that actually live here all their life. People live in Europe, look at the way they live differently. Matter of fact, they have a total different lifestyle. I went to Europe a number of years ago, and it's quite different. You know, the way they drive, the way they talk, the way they eat, totally different. I have a cute story. You know the grasshopper? Everybody knows the grasshopper, right? You see them a lot in this country, in Southeast Asia, in Europe. They are almost everywhere. But even the grasshopper, people from different places in the world see the grasshopper differently. In this country, in North America, you look at the grasshopper and that's really a pest. You spray them, and especially the farmer, the gardener, doesn't want them. But if you live in Thailand, in Southeast Asia, it is a meal. It is an appetizer. So that's quite interesting, a different perspective. If you live in China, something you play with. So that's telling me that we look at things quite different. And let's say if you happen to be a person in Thailand, you don't look at the grasshopper the way we look at here. You have been modeled and framed. This is how you look at the grasshopper. The first thing you see then is, oh, this is an appetizer. So the way we live and act is quite different. We don't choose as freely as we think, because we have been influenced by the culture, the conditioning by the culture, the society that we live in. And this conditioning is very deep in our personality. It's not going to be easy to change. But one thing for sure, we know that all of us would like to have happiness, and all of us doesn't want to feel the pain. Everyone wants to be happy all the time. But somehow, if you ask people, most of the people that you run into and you ask them, are you happy? You're going to see a lot of responses such as, oh, I'm fine. Some will say, well, not so fine. Rarely would you run into an individual where that person jump up and down and say, oh, it's great, it couldn't be any better. And that's really strange. That's really get me curious. You know, we all want happiness, but somehow we don't have it as much as we want. We seem to have more difficulty than happiness. If you look deeply in the way people respond, people act in life, you're going to see that even though they want happiness, but a lot of things that they do really doesn't result in happiness. And sometimes you wonder whether they really see that or not. If you look deeply, when we practice, just like here for the past number of hours since yesterday evening to now, you notice that, and I hope you have noticed, that a lot of time we do things not because we decide to do it. We really is like a puppet. That may be a shocking thing to find out. And who's controlling us? I definitely want to know who's controlling us. What do you think is controlling us? If you believe in the theory that we are not really in control, who may be controlling us? Any idea?
Our needs, our habits, our conditioning.
I view Bruce just like everybody else as a wise person, and he is a wise person. Either that or he read my slide before class. In life, there are two energies that's quite strong and continuously controlling us. One is called grasping, attachment. Second is our habit. If you look at the decision in life, most of the decisions that we make, if you look at deeply, they're usually being driven by either our grasping to want happiness, to want a pleasant feeling, or it's our habit that's doing that most of the time. The goal of meditation is to be able to recognize that, not to transform it yet, just being able to recognize it is a wonderful thing. First of all, you have to believe it first before you can do something about it. You have to be able to see that our grasping is driving us, is pushing us to do things. Let's not decide whether it's good or bad, but usually it's grasping that's driving us. What drives us to wake up in the morning? What drives us to go to work? What drives us to have a relationship? Because we want to be happy. Let's look at this two energy and see if it's really the cause of the problem and how is it causing the problem. The first energy that...
Before you do that?
Yes.
You have unwholesome habits up there. Is it just certain habits that cause us not to be free, or is it all habits?
For this moment, I would like to talk just about unwholesome habits rather than habit in general, because it's quite complex. With the limited amount of time that we have, I'm trying to narrow down two specific things. And instead of dealing with the whole habit issue, just look at the bad habit for now. So let's look at how grasping and unwholesome habit are controlling us. How is that possible? Well, first of all, we have to look at how we live in life. As you know, we live through our six senses. I mean, the world is presented to us through our six senses. Our eyes, our ears, our tongue, our nose, our body, our mind. If somebody tell you, how's your day? And usually you said, it's okay. Well, it's okay because the input that you receive from your eye, seeing things, from your ear, hearing things, from your nose, smelling things, from your tongue, tasting things, from your body, feeling the sensation, and from your mind, all the thought that you have, are okay. So you say, I'm fine. But let's say, if that morning you wake up and somebody was yelling at you, you would say, oh, my day started out really rough. Well, because one of the senses received some pretty rough data. Somebody's yelling at you. So recognizing the fact that we live life through the six senses is quite important to know what we are receiving. So our feeling is totally controlled by what we got through our six senses. We can be really happy if our eye sees nice things, if our nose smells a good smell, if our tongue tastes a good taste, if our body feels warm and soft, if our mind have wonderful thoughts. So in those cases, we're happy. However, if our eye sees something very disturbing, we hear criticism, we taste things quite bitter, and we feel some temperature is quite sharp, either real cold or real hot, or when we touch some sharp object, we don't feel good about that. If there's some unpleasant thought come to our mind, we say that's a bad thing, we're not happy. From that, you see that it's quite obvious. It's almost like a programming thing. You want happiness, you want to feel good, make sure all your senses receive all the right data. And if you know that it doesn't get the right data, then you don't feel so well. However, if you start thinking that way, which is what most people does, our life is dependent on what? It depends a lot on our senses. We become a slave. We've been driven to do whatever it takes so that we can see nice things. We're going to be driven to do whatever it takes to be able to hear nice things. Smell, taste, touch. and thinking about nice things. So is that a way to live a life freely? But that's the reality of things. So whether knowingly or unknowingly, we become the slave to our six senses. By the way, during my sharing, if you disagree, let me know. Then I'll be able to share with you some more. So that's life. That's how we make decisions in life. That's how we decide whether we're going to go to work or we're going to stay home. Whether we're going to have a relationship with somebody because we think this relationship is going to bring us happiness. Well, how do we measure happiness? Because we're going to see nice things. We're going to hear nice voices. Because we want to feel comfortable. That's how we decide we're not going to work this job because this job brings us too much stress. Because we don't see things that we like. We don't feel good about it. Everything is revolved through the six senses. Let me tell you a story about searching for gold. Gold here could represent happiness. So we all are searching for happiness. One way or another, we are. So let me tell you a story about it. Well, this guy, he's searching for happiness or searching for gold. And one day he walked by a river. He looked down and he said, oh, there's some gold down the bottom of the river. So he said, wonderful. I need happiness. I need gold. I'm going to jump down and get the gold at the bottom of the river. So that's exactly what he does. He jumped down and swam down to the bottom of the river. However, he couldn't find it. He said, well, I saw the gold at the bottom of the river, clearly, but when I swam down there, I didn't see any gold. But then he wiped his eyes and looked down the river one more time and said, really? Let's go down the river. So he said, well, I may have missed it the first time. Now he's aiming it exactly where the gold is. And guess what? He jumped down again. Second time, jumped down, but all he found was rock and mud and everything else, but not gold. So he's very discouraged, and he swam up, rest next to the tree. An old man walked by and said, what's going on? And he said, you know, I saw someone go down the river. I jumped down twice, couldn't find it, and couldn't figure out why. And I need to go. I'm poor. And the old man said, are you sure? Are you sure that the gold is down the bottom of the river? And the old man, as being a wise person, probably practiced mindfulness meditation or something like that back then. He thought about it and he said, well, you know, son, you sure the gold is down at the bottom of the river? Or is it up in the tree? What you see is a reflection of the gold. And when you look down at the river, it's a reflection of the gold actually on the branch of the tree. It's not down the river. No wonder when you jump down, you couldn't get it. And he looked up and really the gold was on the tree, not down the river. This is an old story about how we look for happiness. A lot of time, we think that's where happiness is. We work so hard, try to get there, to be able to be happy. But a lot of time we spend our time and energy in the wrong place. We waste a lot of time, we waste a lot of energy, and we found out that the goal is actually somewhere else. So how we look at things, how we view things is quite important. It's actually all we have to be able to find that goal that we need. But if we don't have a clear vision on where they are, we can spend a lot of time just like the man jumping up and down the river, but really the goal was totally somewhere else. So now let's look at the normal perception about life and career, because that's a big thing in any society, especially in this society. I notice, especially in this country, when you meet a person on the street and the way you style a conversation, do you notice not only what they ask, what they talk about?
What do you do?
That's right. What do you do? It's not how's your health, how's your family, how many kids do you have, what do you believe in? It's not that. People are being measured by what they do. Somehow we look at things different. If somebody said they are a doctor, suddenly it changed a viewpoint. If they said they are somebody that worked at the trash removal company, it's a different perspective. Career is a big thing. What we do seems to tell everything about us. Whether we are an accountant, we are an engineer, somehow just that title tells everything about us to the opposite person. But it's not really true. But that's the way it is in this society. And probably for that reason, a lot of people spend a lot of time and energy into their career, probably chasing after happiness. A few years ago, I actually know this couple. They just married for 6 months. The next year, when I meet the husband, and when asking about how his wife is doing, he said that they've decided to temporarily separate because of their career. He's working for a high-tech company in Reston, Virginia, and she's working for a bank in New Jersey. And because of their career, neither one want to give up their career, so they decided to live apart for 3 years. Hearing that, I know quite well where they have their priority. It's career. Career is the most important thing in their life, above relationship between husband and wife. You know, in Southeast Asia, it's actually the other way around without any thinking. The husband and the wife cannot find work. They rather don't have their house and live together than to go separate way and have a house and have all the material work. At first it's quite a surprise for me, but this is the thinking. Now, I'm not saying everybody's that way. I'm just saying this is the story I ran into, to a point of how much we are willing to, in a way, sacrifice for that. And I think there's a good reason for that, because these people think that through their career, they will be able to get that goal, get that happiness. You know, they're not dummy. They are very smart people. But their perception is, if I have a good career, I will be happy. And the happiness that they are thinking of is so valuable, so great, that they're willing to sacrifice these 3 years to get that. And you know, today, in this society, the pressure is getting stronger and stronger on the people. Before, I know when you want to communicate to somebody, you write a letter. You actually write a letter and send it in the mail. 2 days later, the other person receives it. And this is the way business works. Not anymore. You got email, right? You'd be able to communicate much faster, much more efficient. You got cell phone, right? You got pager, right? Probably the only thing I know, but I know there's much, much more high-tech stuff that's putting on us. So guess what? The business expectation is thing has to be turned around immediately. We no longer have the excuse to take a few days. So the pressure is much, much more. It's quite often nowadays when you drive on the highway and you see, you know, early in the morning, I'm talking about 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock, you see people driving in the highway and making call already. The office doesn't start in the office anymore. The office started probably at home and in the car and then on the way to work. And so we are getting more and more into how do we get money, how do we be successful in life, how do we establish a position in our society. We are nobody until we get that title, whatever it is we're looking for. So we end up working a lot. After living in this country, I went to Europe. And in Europe, you know, they work only 30 hours a week or less. I came and visited a friend home, and at lunch, she came home for lunch. It's blown my mind. She worked at the university, and she'd be able to come home for lunch. It's rarely known in this country, how do you have time to go home for lunch? Not only that, she's taking a nap. Taking a nap, and then around 1:30, 2 o'clock, she goes back to work. I didn't expect her to come home like 8 in the evening. Guess what? By 5 o'clock, she's home again. 5:30, she's home again. So even in Europe, the working environment is quite different. People working from 30 to 40 hours a week, and that's about it. In this country, we're talking about 6 days or something like that a week. And if you want to move up, probably have to work even longer hours than that. And in Europe, you don't have these 2 weeks vacation things. They have a month off. The place actually shut down during the 3 months of summer. Not only company, but even shop. If you go into a shop, like a restaurant, they actually shut down for a month and go on vacation. Do you hear that around here? So people are pressured to work and to work and to work because their life is measured by career. And their perception is through working, they'd be able to have the optimal goal, happiness. A number of years ago, I read a report from these two psychiatrists. They said that the family unit in North America are coming apart for that reason, because we spend too much time working. We spend little time for ourselves and for our family. And they said that the family dinner concept is obsoleting. You know, in Vietnam, you don't have a dinner if it's not a family dinner. It's not called a dinner. But here, if you're talking about a family dinner where the whole family get together and sit down and eat, that's very rare. And in most families that way. And if that's the case, then how do you expect the family members to understand each other? When is the sharing time between husband and wife? Where's the sharing time between dad and son and daughter and mother? You don't have those time anymore. So what is true happiness? Well, is true happiness having what we need, having everything we need, the house, car, vacation home, a TV, a CD, whatever. Having those things, is it happiness? If that's the case, we're in trouble, because you know, last year you may want a TV, this year you want a high definition TV. And then the next year, you want the next gizmo, whatever it is. One of the things that we need to recognize is we don't own anything. We don't own anything. Regardless of what the title on our house said, we don't own anything. We are really just an accountant, temporarily owning these things, because we're going to leave this world sooner or later. And when you leave this world, you take nothing with you. So if you recognize that, where do you want to spend your investment of time and energy? On the temporary things that you own for a period of time, or something more? That's really a personal decision. Well, I just want to make one thing clear. I'm not against the material world at all. As you can see, I have a house, I have a car, I have a job, just like everyone here. What I'm trying to do here is bringing some clearness to the way that we see happiness. That's all. I'm not saying that let's not have those things. That's not my message. The important thing is not about having it or not having it. The important thing is seeing clearly of what they are. Are they true happiness or are they temporary happiness? One of the things that's always amazed me, which I always enjoy, is sometimes I go on vacation on the Outer Banks in North Carolina, and I always enjoy watching my kid building sandcastle. They put so much time into making a beautiful sandcastle. It's almost like when they work on that, it's their life. Make sure that the flag is correct, top is correct, and has all the window, and just like a real house. They spend so much time. And if during that effort, if you come and mess up a little bit, boy, do they get upset. Sometimes from watching them, I think they think it's a real house. After spending so much effort building a sandcastle, you know what they do? They walk away. It's always amazed me, the whole concept. They walk away. And the wave comes in and washes down the sandcastle. It's amazing. Thing is, when they're doing it, they get so serious about it, so involved. This is their house. Don't mess with the house. Well, guess what? It's going to collapse. It's going to be washed away. But somehow, during the effort of building the sandcastle, it gets so real. Is that what we do in our life? You know, our life is, if you look at it from a positive aspect, not from a negative aspect, it is a sandcastle. Because one of these days it's going to be washed away. But we get so serious about it during that time, knowing, or maybe unknowing, that's going to be washed away. This is the grasping energy that I'm trying to say. We grasp into the material world to give us happiness. We grasp into the concept that this pleasant feeling that we have needs to stay with us forever. And they are not. During the sitting meditation, you probably experienced this concept already many, many times over. At one moment you sit and you feel quite pleasant. Is it staying? No. If you actually pay attention, you know how long a pleasant moment stays with you? Not long. Only a few breaths, and then it goes away. Even if you try to grasp it, it will go away. Same things. Unpleasant moment, when it comes with us, whether via fear or agitation, do you know how long it stays? The thing is, when we stay in that moment, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, we think that's it. That's the whole world right there. It's either pleasant or unpleasant. And we say, what are we going to do about it? Well, if you go through enough time of it, you know that if you just stay in the present moment, it's going to be gone. It's not going to be with us forever. Nothingness. And that is a powerful understanding that could be called enlightenment. And I truly believe we have enlightenment. However, our enlightenment doesn't stay with us long either. It's second. So we have this second enlightenment, just like the flashing of lightning. We see it, but then we forget it. So the goal of meditation is, how do you keep that enlightenment throughout the day so you don't get distracted, grasped by this energy again? So that's grasping. Let's talk about habit. The habit energy is also quite strong, very strong. If you are 40 years old now, or 60 years old now, you have 40 years of habit energy. You have 60 years of habit energy. And let's focus on the unwholesome habit energy. We know what they are. Well, I don't believe there are any secret. If you walk up to somebody and said, "Do you know your bad habit?" Believe me, most of us do. It's not like a secret where we don't know about it. We know. But the sad part is there's not much we can do about that. It's really hold us in a grip. I have a friend that he's been a meditator for probably 15 years, but he's also a smoker. He smoked every day. Now, he knows smoking is a bad habit. It's not healthy. But he can't help it. In our life, we have things like that. We know those bad habits, but we continue to be controlled by it, not being able to get away. And some of these bad habits, it's just my idea on what they are, but there are a lot of them. Just some suggestion. Excessive shopping. This is a sensitive one. You have to be careful. You know what we do when we are bored? We go shopping, right? It's really strange. Because to me, it's like asking for trouble. And we have a tendency when we go shopping, we look at the latest fashion for the fall, new suit for the fall. It looks wonderful. Suddenly the grasping force come out. Oh, I have to have that. Anger. Some people get upset really easy. It is an interesting subject. I guess if we have time, we can talk about that. My daughter, a few months ago, was telling me that she's watching this movie called Anger Management. And she said, "It's a bad movie, Dad, but if you have time, you may want to share with people about anger management. That's a good topic." And I said, "I agree." Maybe because of the tension, the stress that we receive in the society and the pressure nowadays, people seem to go up the handle real easy. Before, I've never heard of road rage. Probably about 20 years ago, I never heard of those things. And back then, cars are not as nice as now. I remember driving this Nova when we first came to this country. And it's pretty rough. But I never heard of road rage. If somebody cut you off, okay. But now people drive really fancy cars. I mean, leather seat, temperature control independently, each side. Recently, I actually drove in one of those cars. Person just bought it, a brand new Cherokee, a Jeep Cherokee. $60,000. Fully loaded. Everything that you can think of. And she asked for me to drive her to the airport. And I said, "I don't know, I don't feel comfortable driving this $60,000 thing." To my surprise, when you come in and close the door, the seat actually adjusts and pushes you up, close through the wheel. I think the car didn't think that you have that ability, so it's helping you. And then because it was in the evening, the light inside the car actually lit up to show me where I inserted the key. And then it's all the features, temperature control, seated. Well, this is in the fall, so I feel actually warm in my back. And when I get out of the car, again, as soon as I turn off the engine, sit, pull back, allow me room to step out of the car. And I'm not bothering you with all the navigation stuff. And as soon as I make a turn, sir, you have made the wrong turn. Now you can go to the next traffic light and turn around, you know. And guess what? With all those gizmos, we get upset real easy on the highway. People cut you off, you shoot them. It just amazed me. I actually witnessed one time, and I was horrifying, on 95 South. Two cars was driving after each other like crazy, passing me, then one car pulled in, the other car pulled in right behind that, and the guy came out with a baseball bat. I was horrified. So somehow we get upset real easy in this life. It's one of the cases where the glass is full, and just one more drop will overflow the glass. We have been taking it in, we don't know how to resolve it, just taking it in. And then when we go home, the cat just lay in the middle of the floor enough for us to kick the cat. Just one more drop on a full glass, we overflow the glass. And without seeing clearly, we think the cat is the problem, or the guy that's cutting us up is a problem. It's not. That act is just one more drop onto this full glass. But without seeing clearly, we're going to chase after this drop and say, that is the cause of my unhappiness, of my suffering. There's a Zen story that say a dog just walking by and a man pick up a rock and throw at the dog. The dog was hurt and angry and chased after the rock. Is that what we're doing? We chase after the rock? Or we should be chasing after the man? Think about it. The last habit that I put on here is excessive eating. These are really just representation of all the bad habits that's commonly nowadays. Didn't mean to raise as far as importance one or the other. The idea is we know what they are, and knowing it is one thing, be able to transform it, to change it is another thing. A lot of people, when they are easily angry, the best thing they do is take some vacation to relieve some steam, they say. And guess what? You may be able to relieve some steam for a few weeks or a few months, but if you're going to end up doing the same things that you're doing, that glass will get full again. And poor little cat, just lying down in the middle of your way, next time when your glass is full, you're going to kick the cat. So there's got to be something a little bit more permanent to be able to take care of our problem, to give us more freedom. And the road to freedom is not easy. Look at that picture. Well, this picture is pretty hard to see because of the sunlight, but it's supposed to be a picture of a guy walking over this cliff on a rough bridge with one misstep. Guess where he's going? It's going down. So the road to freedom is not easy. If somebody tell you it's easy, don't buy it. He's just a salesman. There's a lot of hard work, because whether it's grasping or habit, it's been built up from all these years. If you build a house and it takes you 40 years to build a house, now if you want to remodel the house, it's quite difficult. First, we got to know where to change it, though. There's a lot of things that we can do. You already know the technique. You already know the secret. Just starting from the mindful breath, you begin to discover who you truly are. You may think that you know who you are. And don't be surprised if after meditating for a period of time, and I'm talking about serious involvement here. I'm not talking about sitting or walking for 15 minutes a day will do it. In the early year, I spent a lot of time in a monastery. And my teacher monastery is in Northern California, which I'm going to be there shortly after this retreat. It is on top of the mountain in a redwood forest monastery. And by the way, you don't have to go to that monastery. You can go anywhere. But I lived there in this forest with minimal accommodation. I actually, in the early year, I lived with a novice monk. Together, two of us live in this shed. The shed that you guys have for storing your garden tool and your lawnmower, we live in the shed. So if you walk through this forest, every now and then you see this shed in the middle of the forest. No air conditioning, no heater. And I'm serious, no heater. The only thing we have is this light bulb, very dim light bulb. So when it gets too cold, we put on additional clothes. And believe me, it's cold. And when it gets too warm, we go outside. But we spend most of the time practicing. You know what we do most of the time? Watching our breath. All day long. Not 15 minutes, not half an hour, all day long. And we begin to really see ourselves, we really understand ourselves. We see what we like, what we don't like. And sometimes we see it before it comes. A lot of times we think our like and dislike suddenly just show up. One day we like this, next day we don't like that. It doesn't. It's actually like the weather. You know ahead of time when it comes. If you look at the weather and it's about to rain, there's like thousands of signs show up before it actually rains. You know that. You can feel the wind start kicking up. You can feel it's getting a little bit cooler. You can see the humidity changing. You can see the cloud coming. You can see it's getting darker. And then it rains. So our feeling is just like that. If you are quiet enough, you will see all those signs, and then you see the like and dislike come. So you really begin to understand yourself. Mindfulness is a wonderful energy. It helps us look at ourselves much more clear. It's like a ray of energy, just like my drawing here, shining down, and see when we start grasping something, when the habit energy starts controlling us, We see it right away. And the best part about mindfulness is it's with us. It's anywhere. It's not like your luggage you have to pack with it. You go on a trip and you forgot to pack your comb or something like that. You don't have to comb your hair. Guess what? Mindfulness is with you. You don't have to pack it. The only thing you have to remember is your breath. So as soon as we start be able to see the energy of grasping controlling us, or our habits controlling us, then we have a chance to transform it. Well, my first recommendation for how do you transform this grasping and habit is go back to the basic. How do we measure happiness? Through our six senses. Normal people, you know how they treat their six senses? Think about how do we treat our six senses? We leave it wide open. We allow our eye to see whatever it wants to see. We allow our ear to hear whatever it wants to hear. We're kind of careless. Our six senses are normally not protected. We're probably taking better care of our children than our six senses. And what am I talking about when I say protect the six senses? In today's society, if you leave your six senses wide open, you're going to receive so many unwholesome energy that no wonder your glass is full so quickly. Just like meditation, what do we do first? We find a quiet place. We find a comfortable place as far as temperature-wise, so our body sensation will be at neutral. We find a quiet place so we don't hear interrupt sound. We close our eyes so that we don't see things that are distracting us. We don't eat. We find a place that doesn't have a strong odor. And we meditate. In life, in a way, we have to apply that concept. Because we don't, there's a lot of external distraction, influence that's come with us. If you watch TV, one of the big things nowadays, they said TV is too violent for kids. Well, for me, TV is too violent for people. Not for kids, for people. The news, if you turn on the radio, and by the way, I do this with my kid a lot. I said, listen to the news for 15 minutes and tell me what you hear. Any good things about it? And my kid respond, well, I hear that the guy just being robbed down the street. I hear that this house on fire because people burn it down. I hear that the court is going through the process now of taking care of a sniper. On and on. I said, okay, within 15 minutes, you hear any good news, something that nurtures you and give you a good spirit for the day. No. So unintentionally, we allow those things to come into ourselves, and no wonder we are cranky. Who would be cranky if you keep hearing bad news? That's what I mean by protecting your senses. We know we have to be selective when to listen, when not to listen. I'm not saying black out either. Either extreme is bad. I'm talking about the middle path where we know when to listen to the news, when not to listen to the news. The problem is we listen to the news automatically. A lot of people go home and turn on the TV and they go and hear the news, whether they like it or not. You can treat that the same way with the way we see things, the way we feel things, the way we're eating, same way. So we got to protect our senses. Don't let it open. Close them down. Intentionally to protect ourselves. Our mind is like a garden. If we plant bad seed, you're going to receive bad fruit. If you plant good seed, you will receive good fruit. Same way. In my experience, I talk to a lot of people at retreat and outside retreat. People come and talk to me about their problem, and I ask them about their life. Majority of the case is because they don't know how to protect their senses. With those senses open, I don't think anybody can be able to have a good life. Nobody will take care of us but us. So we have to be mindful, you have to be selective, and intentionally protect our life, our senses. And the more we protect our senses, the more control we will be, because we have a lot of energy, positive energy, and our glass won't be so full quickly. Let me offer you a cartoon on grasping. By the way, a lot of time when we grasp, because we think that's going to bring us happiness, we watch violent movie, it's not because we are dumb and watch for just watching it. We are looking for excitement. May not be wisely, but we're looking for excitement. It's the grasping energy that pushes us to do that. So there's this cartoon of three caterpillars on the leaf. And one caterpillar starts eating the leaf. The problem is that caterpillar didn't know when to stop the leaf and go on another leaf. So the leaf fall off, and he fall off with it. So the cartoon said, grasping attachment is not knowing when to let go. We got to be mindful to know when to let go. There's nothing wrong with having a pleasant moment. The problem is letting go. Just like when we were out there walking for formal walking meditation, we enjoy the day, we enjoy the breeze, the cool breeze, we enjoy the sunlight, we enjoy the colorful leaves. There's nothing wrong with that. The problem is when we get in, we want to be out there again. If you're there for the moment, enjoy it. But then when it's over, it's over. Don't try to keep it forever, because it won't. And I have a few other pictures here where I show not so nice looking guy, so I label him unmindful. For him, when he walked by a rose, which is a very nice thing, what does he want? He want to keep the rose. That grasping force come out and say, oh, a rose, nice, nice smell, nice image, I want to keep it. But for us mindful people, much nicer looking, when we see a rose, we enjoy the rose, and when the rose is gone, it's gone. Well, using the image of the rose, but really what I meant is everything else in this world, body, feeling, thought. When we have a good feeling on our body, enjoy it, because it's going to be gone, and we know it's going to be gone. When we have a good feeling, enjoy it. Don't attach to it. Well, you know as well as I do, easier said than done, right? So what is true happiness? I don't want to give the wrong impression that I'm against the material world. I'm not. I'm against grasping. And I believe that you can have your life you can have your career if you have a balanced life. And a balanced life is material and spiritual. Without a balanced life, either way, spiritually 100% or material 100%, guess what? You are off balance. And I believe with a balanced life, you will get money, you will get fame, if that's what you want. But the money, the wealth, and the fame that you have is based on wisdom, based on a deep understanding. It's kind of based on compassion. It's based on love. It does not based on greed or hatred. In my mind, that is true happiness. True happiness is you feel at peace with it and you feel free. And you can be happy anywhere. Just like I was telling you the story of my experience in the early life when I was practicing for a long period of time. Even without TV, without electricity, without minimum necessity, I was happy. Now, if I can be happy in that extreme environment, and I wouldn't recommend that to anyone, happiness is not impossible. It's nice to have the cell phone, but it's not a necessity. If you have it, use it. If you have a nice car, use it. If you have a nice home, use it. But keep in mind, don't get attached to it. It's not a necessity. It's really not. So how do we get there? Well, I gave you some warning. I said the road to freedom is not easy. It's practice and practice and practice. Because as we all heard many times before, practice makes perfect. The nice thing about meditation is you actually see the progress with your work. It's just like a tree. When you water the tree, each day you will see the tree grow. And it's almost like a science project. You will see it grow. It's quite an encouragement to see that. It's quite an encouragement to be able to catch your anger before it happens. Oh, I got it this time. And believe me, you will be able to do that. There are times that we're going to miss it. And it's going to take us over, but that's fine. Wait till the next one. We're going to catch it on the next one. And that's really the spirit that we need to be in. Not faulting ourselves, but ready for the challenge. And with those skills, we will be able to live life fully, live life as a real free person. If you are really a free person, you can be free anywhere, in the USA or in somewhere else. Before I end this talk this morning, I would like to read you a story. It's about a story of the a Zen master. Long ago in China, there was a Zen master who lived up on an old tree to meditate. You know, this is a very strange Zen master. He doesn't meditate on the ground, on a firm ground like us. He climbed up on a tree and he stayed up there and meditate. People asked him why he's meditating on a tree. He said, I can concentrate much better on a tree. On here, it's too stable. So he climbed up on a tree and he lived on a tree and he meditated on a tree. No matter if the tree swayed in fierce wind and rain, the Zen master settled himself comfortably high up in the tree. Because of this, he was nicknamed the Bird's Nest Zen Master by the village folks in the area. From time to time, people came to him for advice. They liked the thing he said, and soon he became famous for his kind thought and wise word. As time goes, his wise reputation spread throughout the province. visitor from distant city traveled a great distance to the remote forest for his advice. One day, even the governor of the province decided to also seek for his advice. So he traveled a great long distance. It took several days, and at last he found the Zen master in the forest on a large old tree. The Zen master was meditating and enjoying a cool fall day. Guess what? Just like today, a cool fall day. You know, I was walking out there, I was looking up the tree, I didn't see one. So the governor, after found the tree, he looked up and shouted, "The great Zen master, I am the governor of this province, and I have come a great distance to speak to you. I have a most important question to ask you." The governor waited for a while, but heard nothing. He only heard the pleasant sound of the leaves stirring in the breeze. The governor continued, "This is my question. Tell me, what is the secret of happiness?" That is the big question, right? We all want to know, what is the secret of happiness? There was a long pause and nothing, just the sound, the rustle of leaves again. Finally, the Zen master called out from the tree, "Don't do bad things, always do good things. That is the secret of happiness." But the governor thought this answer far too simple for him to travel many days. He was irritated and annoyed. The governor said, "Don't do bad things and always do good things. I knew that when I was 3 years old. What are you telling me? You know, I traveled a great distance, great hardship. I got here, asked you a serious question, and you tell me something that 3 years old boy knows." Look down at the governor, the Zen master replied with a soft smile, "Yes, you are right. The 3 years old knows it, but even the 80 years old still find it difficult to do." When I read that story, it actually touched me a lot. One of the things that touched me is we know the secret of happiness. It's not really new to us, but it's hard to practice. It takes a lot of encouragement and support to be able to practice.